If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Daniel 3 podcast. This is Jacob Daniel, your host. This is episode 91, and I've been going at it already for an hour and a half over on my third podcast because, you know, I'm the ultra mega libertarian because, you know, it's not good enough to have one podcast. You need to have three and also be a co-host or regular recurring guest on at least three more. So, you know, I collect podcasts like Pokemon cards, what can I say? But I was just over with our guest for tonight on the Take Human Action Pennsylvania podcast done by the Pennsylvania Mises Caucus. And so our conversation is going to kind of pick up sort of at the end of where that conversation ended. So if you haven't watched that, you know, after this one's done, definitely go check that one out because it's a really good conversation. This conversation is definitely going to veer more into the overlap that we have in terms of our religious views and going a bit more into the cultural stuff and less the political stuff. Before we get to that, though, of course, we have to do our sponsor, which is Rabbit Eye Blueberry Wine. If Jesus was walking the earth today and turning water into wine, it would, of course, be delicious Rabbit Eye Blueberry Wine, which is made by my good friend Will Bell down in Georgia, fellow Meacock, and co-host of the Capitalist Communion over on Reed Coverdale's show, Naturalist Capitalist. So, yeah, you know, rabbiteyewine.com if you want to check that out and support a libertarian small business. So, sponsor out of the way. Tonight's guest is returning to the show, but for a much different conversation than we had the first time he was on the show. Gosh, I forget how long ago that was. But let's bring him up now and let's get into it. It's my good friend Torin. Torin, how you doing tonight?
I'm good. I was on that podcast and that was a good conversation. Marathon, but a good one. And are you sure it's ultra mega libertarian and not ultra MAGA libertarian?
Right. Yeah, no, that's right. I guess because I'm a Meacock, so yeah, it's ultra MAGA, obviously.
Yeah.
Gosh. Yeah, yeah. It's got that little tangent. people don't understand. Like, when people go with the whole, like, you know, oh, you're a Mises caucus guy, like, you're a Republican. It's like, dude, I voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016 because of how much I hated Trump. Like, not like, gosh, anyway.
It's, I mean, I voted silly. For Gary Johnson because of how much I hated Trump, which might be worse. I don't know.
I mean, yeah. And Gary Johnson,
he's better.
Yeah,
he's
Gary
better
Johnson and Bill Weld endorsed Hillary Clinton. So, you know,
yeah,
there
that's
you
true.
Go. Yep. What's the saying? Like, a vote for a libertarian is a vote for a, I don't know. I forget the exact.
It's just throwing your vote away.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Something like that.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
Yeah. So this is your second time on this show, though the first time you were on, we talked about Don't Tread on Philly, and
yeah,
you were in a different part of your journey and stuff. So maybe for, it's been a little bit of a while, so maybe reintroduce yourself briefly, just a little bit of your bio background and what it is you do.
Yeah. So I think we talked, it's got to be coming up on a year ago. I think it was.
That's what I thought. It was kind of close to a year, or I think it was like January or February we talked, I think.
I think it was right after the new year because things were kind of getting ramped up here with Don't Tread on Philly. I started an organization called Don't Tread on Philly. It was an offshoot of a LP Mises Caucus project. I'd been involved at the time. I'd only been involved with the party for about 4 or 5 months. Had been politically homeless for a long time. Grew up a Christian, very kind of fundamental Christian right, GOP fan in my pre-college days. And then just got kind of disenchanted over time, and then was just homeless for a long time until the lockdowns hit. And honestly thought the lack of messaging from the Libertarian Party was an absolute joke. Did not think anything good of the Libertarian Party after all the 2020. But then I heard about the Mises Caucus, and they were hardcore messaging against the lockdowns and all that stuff. Heard they needed help here in PA and figured, well, you know, why not just be another body showing up to help them? So I got involved and quickly I never like to do half measures. I always kind of dive in deep. And so it got real quick, was involved at Don't Tread on Philly. Vax mandates came down here in December of last year, almost a year ago to the date. It might be a year ago to the date. I don't remember. I don't really care to remember. I don't want to know. Those were dark days. But started Don't Tread on Philly. We were protesting, fighting against the vax mandates. Got on the show to kind of talk about that. At the time, it was pretty much just going Don't Tread on Philly. I was in this really weird place in life because October of last year, I had come out as trans. And one of the first times I ever talked to Jacob, it was as Audrey. And I don't remember if I went by Audrey on that show or not.
We actually talked about it beforehand because I was like, you had just done it.
Yeah.
And I was like, so, and like, do you want to go by Audrey or what should I, because like, I was uncomfortable because like, I wanted to talk to you about the Don't Tread on Philly stuff. And we had talked a little bit over some Facebook posts about your, you know, experience so far in transitioning and whatnot. And, you know, I was trying to like, just love you where you were at while also like, you know, kind of like delicately plant seeds of like, you know, I hope this is something that you come through and find out if it's right for you or not. And I think you, from my memory, I think you told me because you were still, I think you were like, I'm still presenting more masculine, so just call me Torin for now.
Yeah,
so
probably.
You were pretty gracious about it. But by the way, I do have to just quickly highlight that our madam chair dropped in to say hi, and I just wanted to give her a quick congratulations again.
Yes, congrats.
I was reading her Facebook post about her birth journey today, and sounded like it was a bit of an adventure. And I've been there 4 times with my wife, and I can sympathize with a lot of what she went through. It's but I hope she's a, you know, good libertarian and hasn't picked a very good gender neutral name for the for a child, and is, you know, waiting for the cues of what you know, what
hopefully what, she hasn't done a gender thing. Hopefully she's waited. She won't do a gender reveal for at least another like 5 years.
Right. At least, yeah. So, what do you do? Like, is it like you put the female toys and the boy toys in front, and like whatever one they pick, it's just like I guess that's.
It's like the octopus that predicts the World Cup matches. It goes in. It's got like the golf balls and the tank, and the octopus goes and says, "Oh, England's gonna win." You could do that with gender. It's like, oh, the octopus picked the blue one, so it's a boy. Like, I don't know.
I don't know either. It's really tough. You know, it was funny on the end of the last stream, Calvin was talking about how his social views used to be more on the left, and you know, mine did too. You know, I was a former Democrat, former Bernie bro, and I think the only social issue I didn't really kind of have lockstep with the left was abortion. That's just like one thing from my conservative upbringing that I never shook. I was always anti-abortion. When I was a Democrat, I had a more libertarian take. I was like vehemently against abortion morally, but I didn't think the government should get involved. So, you know, I kind of was allowed to fit in the Democrat circles, but they were, you know, they'd be like, oh, he's a Christian and he's pro-life, but not really pro-life. And so I was a bit of a misfit in those circles. But other than that, I mean, I kind of had a woke phase. I remember going around and, you know, being offended by people's jokes and comments. And I remember like being at work and telling people like, you know, who crack a joke, like that's racist. You need to, you know, rethink your life and how offensive you are and just doing that whole charade and whatnot. And, you know, I used to go back into the Bible and do terrible, what's known as like eisegesis. Like I used to just like twist the scripture however I could to fit my belief system. Mm-hmm. So like I made the arguments for why God was pro homosexuality. I made arguments for why God wanted you to be vegan, because I was also a radical vegan back then. True story. Go Google my name, Jacob Winograd, and vegan, and you will still find this like long, incoherent article I wrote for a vegan group back when, I think in like 2016 or 2017, when I was still I think it was earlier than that. No, that's about 2016, when I was still a radical.
Peter, go kill and eat.
Yeah. But yeah, I've come a long way. A little bit of whiplash sometimes. I wake up and go, nothing. You know, 5 years ago I was in a very different place in my life. Which, you know, but you seem to have gone through a lot more ups and downs yourself. And we talked about it on the last stream. I don't really want to make you do the long version of it again, but just for my listeners who didn't hop on that stream and who maybe don't know, if you want to give like a quick summary in terms of your journey through your experience in terms of gender dysphoria, transitioning, and then detransitioning, and sort of we'll go from there.
Yeah. I'll try to give you the
I hate to ask you to do it again, but it's just like
it's fine. I've had, you know, I kind of used to talking about it now, and I don't mind it. I'm not ashamed of it. I think, you know, had I gone through this a few years ago, I think I'd be very ashamed. But now it's just like, oh man, I made a mistake. I got to own it, and I want to help people. I want to share my story, and hopefully it's a story of hope.
Amen.
But yeah, so as I said, I grew up very kind of fundamentalist, right, Christian, obviously very social conservative. You know, I kind of had a secret growing up, and that's from, you know, the youngest I can remember is I had this discomfort. And, you know, did I hate myself? Did I hate the fact that I was a boy or a man? No, especially not early on. But I also had this really kind of odd curiosity. And I think it was more, I mean, I know a lot of kids have a lot of different odd curiosities, but for me, it was a little bit deeper than that, where it's just like, man, I really wish I was the other sex. I wish I was a girl. I wish I was a woman as I got older. And it was just odd, because in some ways I felt in some ways comfortable with myself growing up. And it was like hitting like adolescence. It was a really weird time, because on one hand, you know, being like attracted to women, yet I also grew up in a very fundamentalist, like, oh, sex is kind of bad sort of thing.
Lights
too.
Lights off, missionary, in between the sheets.
Yep.
Don't make eye contact.
I wasn't even taught that much. it was just like, yeah, girls are bad. Which, yeah. I mean, who knows? But it also just like envy. I had envy too. Just very much envious of girls growing up. And I kind of got into this place in life where I was a Christian missionary at one point. I was a Southern Baptist missionary, of all things. I've never actually identified as Southern Baptist. I don't think I ever would. I do have wonderful friends who are Southern Baptist, so I don't want to speak too bad about it. But I just have some staunch disagreements and had a really negative experience with a Southern Baptist as well. But when I was a Southern Baptist missionary, I was actually kind of finding some freedom, some inner freedom. Starting to sort of believe in liberty and personal autonomy and learning how that fits sort of under God's rule, and was finding this identity of myself and starting to realize, like, actually God made me a gifted human being in a lot of ways. I have my downfalls. I have my struggles. There's this dirty secret that I don't want to tell anybody that I've struggled with, but actually, hey, now that I'm sort of finding my purpose, I'm totally cool with being a man. Unfortunately, that was when I was like 22, 23, you know, brain still forming and all that, and went through some serious abuse at the hands of the Southern Baptists. I won't dive too much into that story, but that sent me on a spiral. It was an ugly spiral. And I had come home from Southeast Asia, had gotten married in 2014, but that was at the same time as when the trans rights movement was picking up steam. In America, you had Orange is the New Black with Laverne Cox. You had Kristen Beck, the trans warrior princess from the U.S. Navy SEALs. You had, Caitlyn Jenner. All of these figures celebrated. And what do you know? Kristen Beck, turns out, is now once again going by Chris Beck. And he had ceased his transition 7 years ago. Which I wish I would have known, but he just came out publicly with that several days ago in a bombshell interview with Robbie Starbuck. I haven't watched it, but I've seen a lot of reactions from people that I trust, and they're like, oh my gosh, this is nuts. But anyways, I was kind of sucked into it. I was sucked into the ideology. There was a big part of me that really believed in that identity that I used to have fostered. But when you go through abuse, especially spiritual abuse and emotional abuse, it cuts at the core of your identity. It cuts at the core of your relationship with God. I mean, I remember standing in showers at night being like, God, do you love me? Do you love me? How could I have gone through this if you love me? How could I struggle with these desires if you love me? Do you love me? And eventually I just felt like I wasn't getting answers and I just spiraled. Eventually, 3 years, is 3.5 years into marriage, my wife left, and this was 5 years ago. We haven't even talked in 4.5 years now, and that is the hardest thing to deal with right now. I am beyond broken through that, brokenhearted, but I'm grateful for what, I said this at the end of the last stream. I'm blessed. I'm not happy or don't wish that I went through that what I went through, but I will say that I think I'm blessed to have gone through it because I didn't go as I'm blessed to have gone through it and not gone as far as I could have, because now I have a story and I think I've got a story of hope. And so what ended up happening is she left in 2017. We haven't talked since 2018. I think the last email we even exchanged was like 2020. I was broken. COVID was horrendous. I bought into this lie. You go online and all the trans rights activists are like, oh, you have these thoughts? Well, that means you're a woman. Or you have these thoughts, that means you're a boy. No man actually wants to and fixates on wanting to be the opposite sex. Like, no man does these things. Like, there's this whole thing, I won't even mention the name of it, where it's like, well, what if you make your base assumption that you're actually trans instead of the basic assumption that you're not and have to prove that you're trans? And all of this stuff is so alluring. And these people, they're influencers, they make these Instagram accounts, they tell their stories, and it's just all fluff. It's like, oh my gosh, life is just so great. It's wonderful. And I'm finally living my true self. And I'm finally who I'm supposed to be. if you don't do this, like, you're just going to keep spiraling. You might eventually commit suicide. You're going to be miserable if you don't transition. I mean, literally, the only picture painted for somebody struggling with gender dysphoria was that you have to transition. And what I like to, and I'll share this analogy because I shared it last time, the way I like to describe gender dysphoria is it's a real thing. People actually deal with it. I've dealt with it. It's a pain, but it's not like a root cause. It's not like there's no scientific evidence of it being that they haven't found the cause of it. The trans activists will say, oh, these studies where they think trans women have the brains of women. No, it's all garbage. It's that those studies are beyond discredited. But for what it is, it's this pain. And it's like, think about it. If you break your leg, and you break it bad, the bone is sticking out of your leg. It is I've broken bones. I've broken my collarbone. I had my thumb slammed in a steel door and it severed the tendon in my thumb. My thumb was stuck like this. I pick it up and that pain was horrific. And since, you know, I'm a man, I'm not a woman, so I don't know what childbirth feels like. So, I don't know. As they say, that's the worst pain in the world. I guess men would say the worst pain is a kidney stone. I haven't had one of those, but the thing about it is like that bad, but it's like an existential pain. But pain is always caused by something. And what's sort of the trans rights and the all that hasn't attacked is like, what's the cause? And so the pain's there, but it's caused by something. It's caused by the broken leg. And so what transition does is it's like the morphine to that pain. It makes it feel good. It makes the pain go away. And so when I decided to transition, I was on hormones for, in total about almost a year and a half. I was on them for about 6 months before I came out publicly. It made things feel a lot better. I didn't struggle with gender dysphoria when I was on hormones. There was awkwardness and there was weird stuff, like the first time I came on the podcast, but I wasn't feeling that pain of gender dysphoria. But I noticed I was getting a lot of love, a lot of accolades and a lot of things. I was thinking about running for mayor here in Philly. I had gotten an award with the Mises Caucus for Issue Coalition and Don't Tread on Philly at the national convention. Like I was being celebrated as a human, not as a trans person, but just as a human. I had plenty of friends at work and elsewhere here in the city that celebrated me as a human or as a trans person specifically. But I was still broken. Like there was something still broken. Like that leg was still broken and I needed more and more morphine. And it was getting to the point where I was thinking, okay, so what's my next steps? Like, do I need some sort of surgeries or like what's going on? But I just got to this point where it suddenly hit me one day. I remember at one point I had prayed and I said, God, if you don't want me to do this, do something to wake me up that I can't deny it and I'll go back. And I had a dream one night. I won't share it. I won't share what the dream was, but I woke up in a cold sweat because it suddenly hit me like, oh my God, I might have given up everything that I truly wanted for a lie. And I was kind of in turmoil for a couple of weeks I'm laying in my bathtub, just like depressed, anxious, crying out to God, like, help me. Why do I feel this way? And suddenly it hit me like, why do I hate myself? Why do I hate who I am? Why do I have this intense self-rejection that I feel like I need to run and be someone else? Like, my wife really did love me. And why could she see something in me that I couldn't? Why does the Mises Caucus see something in me that I can't? Why did people at my work see something in me that I can't? What is it? Like, what is it? And suddenly it just hit me. Well, I just have this self-hatred, this self-rejection that is clouding everything. And when I stopped and thought about it and said, hold on, what if I chose not to hate myself? that was like putting the cast on my leg. That was like putting the steel plate on my leg. It was actually addressing the underlying cause of my gender dysphoria. And with that, when you start to actually heal the broken limb, the pain starts to diminish. It doesn't mean it automatically goes away. It doesn't go away overnight. You know, you might still be having some lingering pains as time goes on. And I've had that. It's been 6 months now since I decided to detransition. And I still have lingering pains from time to time, but it slowly diminishes and it slowly starts going away. Now, if I don't pay attention, if I don't pay attention to my inner self and my body and actually, you know, do the work of loving my body, meaning treating it well, caring for it, eating well, exercising, those things, that self-hatred creeps up again. And guess what creeps up again with the self-hatred? The gender dysphoria. So yeah, that's kind of been my journey. And now I've been back just living as Torin again for, about 6 months now. And, you know, I've for the first time in 10 years, like that identity that I was starting to, it was 10 years ago in Southeast Asia and Malaysia that I was kind of fostering that identity. It's like for the first time in 10 years, I've got that back. For the first time in 10 years, I feel like I'm myself. Embracing the masculine parts of myself. I'm embracing the feminine parts. I mean, I'm digging the long, you know, styled colored hair. Like I'm kind of digging it and with the fake gauge earrings. Like I'm just digging that kind of thing right now. And now it's like, gosh, I was always happy as a man. Always. I never wanted to be anything different. I never wanted to go down the routes that I did. But I was a broken, hurting individual that got caught up in a lie that sold it as the cure for what was hurting.
Yeah. Now the way I have heard it described by other detransitioners and Christians who've talked on the subject is that it's, you know, in a lot of ways it's a false gospel. It offers a false salvation. It's the salvation through this sort of amalgamation of like cultural and medical interventions. And, you know, a lot of it sort of like circles around this idea of identity, which is something I wanted to talk to you tonight. Cause we hear this a lot in the gender ideological camp. The idea that we are trying to affirm someone's identity and, you know, what is an identity is something that, you know, like as much as like, so the cliche question going around, I wouldn't say it's cliche, it's the common question going around right now is what is a woman, which is kind of like Matt Walsh's documentary, which I've watched. I think it was, you know, pretty decent for what it was. I think that more fundamental, though, a question that we should be asking, especially as Christians, but also as libertarians, also Angelist trolling us in the comments. Jacob, you should be ashamed of yourself. It's obvious Torin is a trans woman struggling with her identity, and you're taking advantage of her to support your worldview. Turning this off now. it's funny, like, but that really goes along with what I'm saying, right? Like, that is the left, the gender cult's response is that, like, your identity is your gender, in a sense. Like, and I don't, it's hard for me to understand that. And the way I've always looked at it, I remember having conversation, I think one of the first conversations I had with you over a Facebook post was along these lines, and was like, I understand, not like on a personal level, but I can, you know, intellectually understand the idea of having a dysphoria with your body and your sort of like struggles along those lines. I didn't have it with gender. I remember being gaslit when I was in like elementary school and stuff by kids bullying me, trying to convince me I was gay because I cared about my friends. It was really weird. It was like, I've always been someone who like, when I had friends, including like male friendships, like I'm an emotional person, so I want to connect with them, you know, emotionally, including and that was, you know, at least the scene I grew up in as a 90s kid, you know, the way you were supposed to behave with your male friends was like you didn't care about anything, and emotions were weak and feminine. And so when I just displayed my natural emotional and, you know, maybe slightly feminine side, I kind of agree with what you said. I think we all have male and female characteristics. It's not like a, you know, no one is just 100% one thing or the other. And there's a beautiful diversity in God's creation, I think. You know, I think of, you know, passages like 1 Corinthians where, you know, Paul says that there is no Jew, no Greek, no slave or free, no male nor female. We're all one in Christ Jesus. And I appreciate that. I appreciate that masculinity and femininity not only exist within us, they exist within God. So those are things that are true. And I think there is certainly a toxic element maybe sometimes that exists within maybe like evangelical conservative Christianity where it's just like, you know, things that you could describe as a toxic masculinity or toxic view in terms of assigning gender roles or things like that. And being too tyrannical along those lines. I want to acknowledge all that because it's true. But I think there's something along the idea of like your identity being wrapped up in, and we see this with gender, or it's like your identity is your sexuality, or your identity yeah. is your gender, or your this other thing, and I struggle to come up with a different word for it other than it's almost like fetishizing mental illness along all these different lines, including like I know people that like their entire personality is I'm autistic, or I'm ADHD, or I'm, you know, I have depression. And it's like, that's all. And it's like, and it's, I see a correlation between that and people who, not everyone, but a lot of people who are caught up in this gender movement where it's like they make their entire identity around this. And I just don't, understand yeah. it. Yeah. So what are your thoughts on that? Like what is happening there? And, you know, what is identity, if you were going to try to answer that question?
Yeah. I'm tracking with you. I'm tracking. I think I would say I don't have answers, but I think you're tracking in the right direction. I would say gender identity is bullshit. It's bullshit. There's no such thing. There's no scientific evidence for it. It is a made up thing.
But the studies,
gender dysphoria is a real thing. And so, yeah, you can craft an identity out of your gender dysphoria. So if you want to call your gender identity crafted out of your dysphoria, then sure. But I think at least from especially a biblical standpoint, I think you have to push it back against that. Because identity comes from, you know, man is made in the image of God. And what is God's identity? When Moses asks, you know, what do I call you? And he says, I am that I am. Yeah. I am that I am. You know, and Jesus says, before Abraham was, I am.
Right. And that I love when he says that and they tear their robes because it's but people like that is like the most blasphemous thing Jesus could have said, except it wasn't blasphemy because it was true.
Yeah, that. And well, there's an extension that I think you can make. I want to be careful not to say that we humans are therefore God, but we're made in the image of God.
Right.
So it's kind of there is a sense that as we humans, we are what we are. Like I, Torin, am what I am as Torin. I just am who I am. I am who God made me to be. I am a mixture of my genetics, my social conditioning, my friends, my family, all of the above. Like it's all part of me. My gender dysphoria is a part of me. It just is. I am who I am. And that is as someone who was made in the image of the great I am. And I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, from the very beginning, it's always been a struggle of identity. Who are we? Who is God? Do we, you know, I've been listening. I don't know if you've followed the Bible Project at all. It's just a series by a couple of Hebrew scholars that are talking about the Bible, and they walk through the Bible. I've been walking through their series they did in 2022 on the Torah, and they got to this point in Exodus where God kind of reveals his name. And they said the whole thing with I am was that, you know, he was the life source. The reason why he said I am that I am was because he was the source. He was the cause. You know, their Aristotelian logic is that, you know, no contingent being can come into existence from there has to be something that a contingent being comes into an existence from that isn't contingent. It just always existed. And God is that thing. And so he said, I am that I am. And it also ties back to his promises. Like, who am I as God? Who are you as my people? Like, I am that I am. I am the one who's always been with you, that made you, that sustains you, that delivers you, redeems you, heals you. And there's always been this battle of we as humans saying, well, I don't know. I don't know who God is. I don't know who I am. I want to be my own God. And that's, I think, part of where this whole gender identity thing comes up with. I'm human. I'm fallen. I want to be my own God. I want to have my own way.
Yeah. Well, that's the original sin in the garden when the serpent says, eat this fruit and you will be like God. And being able to know right from wrong, and the context of that being like to know right and wrong, to define what is right and wrong yourself, which is to usurp God, because he's the one who defines what is right and wrong. And there's something like we talk about the whole identity thing. And getting wrapped up in these like individual characteristics and making it, you know, their entire identity. And on the previous stream we did, you talked about like it's almost a radical or pathological individualism. Yeah. And we see this happen a lot where libertarians embrace this sort of like trans ideology, because to them like it seems like a natural fit, like well, we're the philosophy or the party of individual rights, and that includes the right to define your identity and including your gender identity, and you can't be a good libertarian if you would tell people they can't define their identity the way they see fit, which, you know, so it's like I can kind of see the sort of arguments they make, and I think it is an example of, you know, I think sort of like what the Bible says, like, you know, everything has a time and place, but things can be used in their goodly, godly contexts, and they can also be taken out of that and become pathological. And I think individualism, when it's detached from that sort of like Christian.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Ethos can become this pathology that just, you know, it spirals out of control into this self-deistic, like secular religion of sorts,
yeah.
Where like, you know, and in some ways it's new, and in some ways it's very ancient, because it is just people elevating themselves above God, you know, making idols out of, it's like making an idol out of their ability to act on every sinful whim that comes into their mind. This is where, like, true libertarianism to me can't go down that road, because it's like, I think the Christian idea of, like, that you're not, I don't think you can really be free if you're a slave to sin. You know what I mean? Like, freedom isn't just the, and this is something that it's hard to talk about, because these things get so, like, so much bad baggage because of the evangelical Christian right, who, like, I think have, we talked about this before, like, they have kind of the correct views, but, like, the worst praxis for trying to, like, go out and push back against these things in the culture. It's like they do it all wrong. And so, I mean, I'm kind of rambling here a bit, because, like, there's so many things I want to try to connect here. But I think, you know, talk about that a little bit, like the, you know, how you see it, this, like, radical individualism, and where libertarians are, you know, those are our folk, like, we're both libertarians, but we're also both Christians, and we know, like, there's, you know, yes, we are individuals, but it's like, I think people, to steel man the critique, I think some libertarians think it's tyrannical or anti-libertarian to have nature or some cosmic entity that would define who you are and usurp your ability to define yourself.
Yeah.
Like, what's the response to that, or at least in how you would put it?
Well, I would say, yes, I agree. These are all great questions. And again, I'm very much tracking with what you're saying, thinking along the same lines. I would try to reframe it. I would try to take it away from the kind of sin and righteousness, you know, the judgment aspect of things, and look at it more from a suffering aspect. Because there is a sense of, like, oh yeah, live and let live. Or there is even, I mean, you can take a verse out of context and say, you know, not all things are, you know, all things are permissible, but not all is beneficial. You could make a lot of justifications and a lot of things. There are a lot of people who do take this. It's really easy to go into, it's really easy to go online, look up a few hashtags, and find all the people that are just, it's all about glorifying themselves. It is terrible. It's not good. It's like, what do I do with this? My pastor gave a great sermon the other day. He was talking about Rahab and the spies going into Jericho. Rahab was a prostitute. God used the prostitute. And it doesn't say that she changed her ways. It said she was welcome into the family of God. It doesn't say anything about whether or not she changed her ways. Christians got to deal with that. How do you deal with this? Is it glorifying prostitution? No, it's absolutely not. But God used the prostitute. And one of the things that he kind of talked about is, like, well, how do we deal with sin? How do we deal with it? I was reading something recently. I've been reading a lot of Dallas Willard. He wrote The Divine Conspiracy, a brilliant book. It's what helped me reclaim my faith. And then I was reading a follow-up to that, The Renovation of the Heart, also amazing. One of the things he said at the end of The Renovation of the Heart is that, you know, humans ultimately don't choose their beliefs. We don't actually choose our beliefs or desires. Those come out of us regardless of our choice. Now, we can cultivate beliefs and desires. We can spend time with God, cultivate them. But ultimately, we don't choose whether or not we believe. I mean, even C.S. Lewis had the famous story of him getting in the sidecar, not a believer. Then he got out and he was, and he didn't make the choice. It just flipped. And so there's this aspect of we as Christians needing to not so much like not look at it in judgment like we would typically want to, like, oh, you've got to change your ways. Yeah, there's some things that you can do to, like you said earlier, like plant some seeds and, you know, just love and help direct. But ultimately, it's got to be God who changes.
Yes.
And here's the other thing is there are a lot of people where this whole thing isn't necessarily this narcissistic, just blind hedonism. I have my own narcissistic tendencies. I have my own hedonistic tendencies, just like all humans do. Mine bit me in the ass more than others, maybe just in the pathways I went down. But I was also trying to deal with pain.
Yes.
Like I had that leg that was broken, and it was like that. I think had culture not gone the way that it did, had the things in my life not gone the way they did, I think I could have dealt with that broken leg without those shots of morphine. But it didn't. And I lost trust. I lost faith. I made choices, and I have to live with those choices. I do. I have to live with those choices. I'm a 33-year-old man. I'm old enough and to take responsibility. But I was also groomed. Into thinking that morphine was a good thing, that I just needed to keep pumping it into my body to take care of that pain.
Well, you know what's funny is, like, when you were on the last stream, you used that same expression, like,
yep,
you know, you were groomed, and adults can be groomed. And I just kept thinking, like, yeah, you know, like, the enemy does sort of groom us.
Yep.
I mean, he uses our sinful desires and stuff and you know, grooms us and, like, you know, like, persuades us into thinking, like, oh, if we go down this road, like, it, you know, we're enticed with all the good things we think that we're going to get if we go down it. And
yeah,
and I agree. I think a lot of people, I think it's like the culture. Again, there's some people that do this, but I think it's more the culture that sort of is hedonistic and self-deistic and pleasure seeking.
Yep.
But I do think that a lot of people, I think, are just like what you're describing. Like they're doing this out of pain and trying to alleviate a real pain. And I have a real empathy for that. And it's, you know, to me, it's like, it's, I never really like to talk about sin in terms of like judgment, because that belongs to God.
Yeah.
But I do like to talk about sin in terms of the consequences of sin, which are death. And I don't think it's death because it's I don't view God as like, you sinned and I'm killing you. I think God's saying, like, no, your sin is killing you.
Yeah.
Your sin is bringing death and destruction and suffering and pain into your life, because it separates us from God and it takes us down the wrong path. It takes us down paths that aren't good for us. And God knows that, and he wants what's best for us. He wants us to thrive and to grow I mean, like any good father, he wants to see his children grow up and stand on their own two feet and to be in communion with him. So it's like I never want to talk about sin, whether it's any sin, including you know, people who are struggling with gender identity in those terms. And it's always like difficult trying to thread that needle of like wanting to stand on truth without condemning people in a way that's like, I don't want to, you know, people already in pain. I don't need to beat them down more than they already probably are internally feeling beaten down. It's like, I want to offer them a lifeline. I want to say, you know what? You're trying to escape your pain.
Yeah.
But the only way you're going to escape your pain isn't by embracing a freedom to go deeper into your sin. It's rather to find freedom from your sin, which can only come through Christ. And I agree with what you said. Like, I can't do that for you. It's like people that get into these arguments and stuff with people, whether it's over transgender ideology or homosexuality or any other sinful lifestyle. It's like, you're not going to debate someone out of their struggle. Yeah. It's like they have to go through that, and they have to come to Christ on their own. And I think it is more, like you said, I think it's much more Christ coming to us and rescuing us. But I think sometimes it's like I think people have to go through, it sounds cliche, but like you kind of have to go through a journey. Yeah. Because I think, you know, like, and you've said it yourself, like, I think you are in a very unique position now. And I think, you know, now God didn't cause the suffering that happened to you, but God foreknew it would happen and acted in ways that he used what the enemy intended for evil in your life, and he's turning it for good. And I think it's, you know, as a friend who's just been watching you go through this, it's just like, I mean, it honestly brings me to tears. I remember talking to my wife after one of the conversations we had, and I was just like weeping with tears of joy, just like at like knowing, like just like hearing you talk about like this burden that's been lifted off of you. And not that, we're all still fallen, so we all still struggle, but to hear that you've come so far from where you are, and then to be in the position that you're in to go after others who, like, you know, you can go to people now and go, listen, I was you. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I've been there. I can, it's like you got God, just like he did with Joseph when his brothers committed that great evil to them, you know, it's like he puts us in positions where we can do more good because of the suffering we went through. And it's not a display of God ordaining evil, rather it's a display of God ordaining over good.
Yeah.
and conquering evil. And it's just, I mean, it's an amazing testimony. And I think, you know, what do you do when you, I mean, we talked a little bit about this on the last stream, but like, what do you do? And also, like, what can we do better as, you know, more specifically here, like Christians, you know, 'cause I think you and I agree that they miss the mark. And I think the problem is it's just, these topics aren't talked about enough. And so you get a lot of people who do the wrong thing. And then like a lot of people who are just like, they know not to do the wrong thing, but they don't know what to do. So they don't do anything, which obviously isn't good either. So what can we do, you know, to love on people who are going through these struggles, to help them along their journey towards trying to show them that the true deliverance from their pain isn't what the world has to offer, but what Calvary has to offer.
Yeah. I appreciate everything you said. It means a lot, because yeah, it's been a journey, and it's one, like I said, I'd rather not have this. But if it helps give people hope, and I've had people reach out to me privately, and it's like, man, I'm glad I had this story. I'm glad I have another option. And I think that's what you have to do. And I'd say this, whether it's from a Christian perspective or a libertarian perspective, we have to offer a third way. We can't either condemn nor affirm. Both ways lead to this. It's a false condemnation and affirmation. They're a false binary. You know, yeah. we're trading the true binary of male and female for a false binary of affirmation or rejection. it's neither. I mean, I brought up earlier about looking at it from the suffering and the pain standpoint. I mean, one thing I would say to someone who is struggling with gender dysphoria is gender dysphoria is not a sin. It's a pain. It's a feeling. It's caused by things. Could it be caused by sin? Yes. That broken leg could have been broken by any number of causes. You're doing, somebody else is doing, just random chance. I don't know. Gender dysphoria is not a sin. You're not weird for going through it. Many more people go through it or have at least felt it in some form or fashion at some point in their life than you realize. And it's okay. You're just a normal human being. You experience brokenness. It's okay. You experience pain. Pain itself is not a sin. Wanting to be free from pain is not a sin. It's the natural order of things is to not be in pain. That's how God created us. God created us to not be in pain. Pain was a result of all, you know, it was a result of the fall. And it's natural desire to not be in it. Seeking to escape it at all costs, that's a sin. And so how do we deal with that? Then to some extent, I think in some cases, sometimes you need a shot of morphine in the leg to figure out how to treat the leg. Sometimes people just have to explore it, have to go down it. And I'm not going to make a judgment and say that decisions to kind of go exploring aren't sinful. I'm not going to say flat out that they're the worst things in the world either, because God uses them. Yeah. God uses our sins and our bad decisions to help us out. So I think, you know, whether it be from the Christian perspective or the right or the right libertarians, it's okay. Let's get off this whole thing where, oh my gosh, this is bad society. This is bad. Groomer. I mean, yes, it's really bad. And yeah, they really are grooming kids into this. They are. And yes, that needs to end. But if you don't keep a lens on the individual sufferer, you're going to lose them real quick. And they're just going to say, oh, if you're just telling me I'm being groomed or these people are grooming me, they're just going to run away and want to go further into their transition. You have to be with them. And I don't have a good answer for what that means, other than I know that people were with me in my life. Yeah. They struggled. They fought back. They didn't reject me. I also was open. I didn't outright reject other people. I fought back. And eventually God... I kept wrestling with God, and that's all you can do is encourage people to keep wrestling with God. And then to the left libertarians, you know, the classical liberal caucus that is saying, oh, you know, keep the government out of things. Okay. Yeah, I agree. Let's keep the government out of things. As an anarchist, I'd be like, yeah, I don't want the government involved in things, but I could also see a minarchist argument for why you'd want to ban such things. But here's the thing to them is like, okay, so if you're just going to keep shooting up on morphine, what if they get addicted and hopelessly addicted and destroy their lives with it? What if they get hooked on and then they end up taking fentanyl and dying? It's like you have to also, like, if you're going to give them access to something that treats the pain, you have to also address the source of the pain. You have a responsibility. Like, if you're going to give them the free shoot up sites in Philly to shoot up fentanyl, you know, or whatever, you also have to be responsible to actually treat the root cause of the pain too. And so it's like, okay, if you're going to allow people access to quote unquote gender affirming care, you have to try to treat what's underneath. Mark Yarhouse wrote a book called Understanding the Transgender Phenomenon. Maybe one of the only and best Christian books on the subject. And I had read it before my transition and had agreed with it and wanted that to be a hope for me, but it was the only subject it was the only book that I had read that I had kind of agreed with and didn't find anything else that helped me. And basically said, he's like, okay, so do what you have to do to ease the pain, only go as far as you absolutely have to and keep working on what's underneath. Mm. And maybe eventually you won't, maybe you'll go far. Maybe you'll go like I did. And I was on hormones for a year and a half and then suddenly found the cause and just decided I don't need it anymore. That the pain's manageable. Now that I've found the cause of the pain and I'm addressing it, it's actually manageable. So I think from a Christian standpoint, especially, is I think we have a responsibility to meet people in their pain and help them through that. And don't settle for the cheap response of escaping from pain. Like, okay, like if you feel like you have to make this decision to go on hormones or else you're going to kill yourself, you know, I'd rather you go on hormones than take your life. Like, honest to God, I'd rather you do that. But let's keep working. Let's keep exploring. Yeah. Let's keep figuring out the real root of this. For me, it was my self-hatred. It was my self-hatred, my self-rejection. And ultimately, I mean, one thing that Willard would say is self-rejection. I mean, you don't want to sound, I don't want this to be all this like, ooh, gooey, gooey self-love thing, but no, I was made in the image of God. Me rejecting myself is rejecting. It's the ultimate rejection of God because he made me as an image bearer. And if I reject his creation, I reject him. Yeah. I am saying what you made, God, is not good. When he said it was good. Yeah. So I'd say you just got to be with them in the pain, just like any other pain.
That's what Jesus did. He sat with sinners and and I think some people are reluctant to do that because it's like, oh, am I condoning the sin? It's like, well, I mean, was Jesus condoning the sin of the prostitute when he spared her? Was he can, you know, I mean, he, the Pharisees tried to say like, oh, look, this man, you know, I feel so cliche. I make the same joke every podcast. Say Jesus was always talked badly about by the Pharisees because he's like he sits with sinners and tax collectors.
Yeah,
which is how we know tax collectors are even worse than sinners, right? But yeah. It's like, you know, the sinners are okay, Jesus, but the tax collectors, it's just too far.
87,000 IRS agents coming after your Venmo accounts. You know, right, it's like, well, demonic.
While I'm being audited by the IRS, it's like, hey, let's go get some coffee. Let's go sit down and talk.
How long has it been since your last confession?
But it's like, it's like there's no silver bullet. It's just love people. And loving people shouldn't be, like, I think you're right. I think it's not this binary of you're either affirming everything they do or feeling the need to condemn everything that you find that is wrong. And you might be, you know, rightfully discerning things that they're doing wrong, but I think the approach needs to be a lot more like, I mean, look at the story of the prodigal son. Like, the son had to go out into the world and experience that and hit that point where he walked back covered in mud because he had been, you know, literally with the pigs and said, you know what, like, I would rather just be a slave in my father's house than do this. And then we have to be like the father in that story to be like, welcome home and we love you and we never wanted you to leave, but we let you leave because you had to do it. Like, I think that some people, you have to love them, but release them to go on that journey and trust that the Holy Spirit will lead them back in God's own perfect timing. And when that happens, we have to be ready to receive them in love. And and I, you know, I mean, my hope and heart is that, like, you know, the time that you spent during that journey when you were, you know, with the Mises Caucus and stuff, like, I hope that was the environment that we sort of like created for you. And that's what I always, you know, when I first met you and was like that, and it was like really the first time I had been like really confronted with like, okay, now I have to actually handle this. And it was like, you know, I won't say I did it perfectly. I I don't know, but it's, I was always happy with the fact that our group accepted you in. And yeah. And there were plenty of us that were probably, like, you know, had mixed feelings about it at the time in terms of, like, you know, we don't want to, you know, be misconstrued as saying, like, well, you know, gender and ideology and transitioning is what we're about. Because I think for a lot of us it isn't, but it's like we wanted to accept you as a person and not, like, while you were, while the world would look at you and just define you and your identity by your struggle with your gender, we wanted, and I wanted to define you not solely based on that one struggle or that one pain. And I think that that's also part of the equation, is like, we need to, for some people, it's like, that's all they're getting. It's like, they're getting all this feedback of, like, your identity is your pain and your struggle. And we need to try to identify with people, like, no, your identity is so much more than just your pain and your struggle. So much more and so much deeper. I'll give you the last word and response to what I just said, and then we can, and I'll definitely have to have you back on, because there's so many, there's like a million different threads we can go down.
Yeah, and I've learned a lot as well. And, you know, what to everything you said, I mean, I felt very loved and welcome. I felt like, you know, I felt like, yeah, it wasn't, it was just part of me. It was part of who I was, not the whole thing. And I think to whatever extent that we can help someone who's struggling with it out to that extent, to bring them out of this, like, this is who I am. I am a trans person. I am this, I am that. It's like, actually, you're more than that. You are what you are. Like, you are what you are. Your struggles are part of that. Your pain is part of that. Your choices are part of that, but you're a more holistic human being. And I think the only way to really see healing is to get that whole human being kind of integrated.
Yeah.
And that's what I was lucky enough to have that space. I was lucky enough. I was blessed enough with enough introspection to give myself that space as well. And not a lot of people do. It's like, a lot of people say, oh, this feels good, I'm going to keep going. For me, it was like, oh, this feels good, but I'm still walking around here, and although I can't feel it, I can tell my leg's still broken. Like, something's wrong. And so, like I said, I was blessed to have gone through what I went through. Also blessed to not go as far as I could have. I lost a lot. I mean, I lost a marriage that at this point I can't get back. I mean, I pray for it, through tears all the time. Hoping that it could come back, but, like, I don't know. I made horrible choices that hurt my wife, and me being groomed and being hurt myself isn't an excuse. I mean, it's an explanation, and it says, I won't go back down this route. I see it for what it is, but it's not an excuse for my choices. And yeah, so the only thing we can do is love. That's all we can do. And I want to love others and help them. I want other people to have a choice that I didn't have. And this is the libertarian aspect of it that I think is key, right? People, this isn't a libertarian issue. It's a culture war. No, giving people choice is a libertarian thing. It's the core thing to liberty.
Love is a libertarian thing.
Yeah, love is.
And teaching people to, like, we always talk about, like, loving others, but something you've talked about in your testimony is, like, learning to love yourself. And that's hard. It's hard for a lot of people to do. Yeah. And we all have our different struggles with trying to find ways to love ourselves. And we all have our own pains, and they're not always things that we can see on the outside, because some struggles with pain and sin are more internal and hidden, and they don't translate to external things all the time, although they can in time. But I think the biggest thing is learning to, like, we can't give what we don't have.
Yeah.
And it's like we can desperately want to love our neighbors, to love our spouses, to love our children, but if we don't love ourselves, yeah, and if we don't believe that God loves us, which I think it's like you can't love yourself to you, at least in my experience, like until I really, like I grew up in the church and I prayed all the right things, said all the right things, but until I hit a low point in my life and I really realized, like, for the first time in like a meaningful way that like oh, God loves me. Like, and God doesn't love me like he thinks I'm perfect. Like, God sees every aspect of my being. He sees, yep, all of my sin, all of my brokenness, all of my nakedness. Every single time I've lied or cheated or done or hated or said terrible things or hurt people, all of it.
Yep.
And he still loves me. He loves me to the point where he died on the cross for me. And because of that, he doesn't, like, he sees it, but it's also, he doesn't see it. He sees me through the righteousness that his blood purchased. And I think it's like, once that really hits, it's like, wow, God loves me. God forgives me. If God can forgive me and I can't forgive myself, it's like, well, and intellectually, it's like, I get that. But every day you got to live it. It's like, you got to get up and just choose to, and we didn't have time to get into this, and this might be something we can do next time, is like, love isn't just like a feeling. It's like, it is a lifestyle. Like, yep, loving yourself is like all, is everything from, in terms of your prayer life to your mental health to even your physical health and taking care of your body. I mean, the idea that like our bodies are like temples, and it's like, our church just went through like the book of Hebrews, and we were studying like the old tabernacle and the temple and all the different rituals and things that they went through. And it's like, you know, if that's what they did with the tabernacle and the temple when there was the separation from God, but now we're the temple that the Holy Spirit dwells in. Well, we got to take care of our, I'm not saying it's like, I'm not saying we have to go out and sacrifice animals and cover ourselves in incense, but like, we have to do the sort of like metaphorical equivalent, the allegorical equivalent to like, if God said for these temples and stuff, for his Holy Spirit to dwell in, had to have these certain things done to prepare the space and to take care of it, we have to view ourselves as temples and take that same time and effort for self-care and self-love, because, yeah, God loves us and chooses to dwell in us. And it's like those are the things that Christians and libertarians need to focus on, yeah, I think, because that's where true freedom comes from.
Yep.
It's hard to put in exact words, but like, true freedom comes from not seeking to just follow every base desire, but through,
yeah,
surrendering that to something greater. I mean, it's hard to put in exact words, but it's like that true freedom comes from that complete surrender to the to God's love and to be transformed by that.
Yeah, there's true freedom is internal, not external. And there's no greater love than, you know, one who would lay down his life for his friends. And in the words of the immortal DC Talk, love is a verb.
Yeah. that's a perfect way to end it. Torin, man, we've been talking for like almost 2.5 hours, 3 hours,
yeah,
between both streams. But people, where can people follow you? You have your little Twitter handle there. It's at TPDNWSK.
Yep.
So is that anywhere, any other thing else you want to plug before?
Yeah, mostly that. And then I've got a Substack writing about my experience, tpdanowski.substack.com. I need to do some more writing there, but, got a few articles up and a few things to check out. Yeah, just right now, Twitter. Yeah. It's like TP Danowski, but it's just without the vowels, on Twitter. And yeah, check that out. If you want to have like a great resource, anybody that's like questioning, like needs help, check out Genspect, GenSpect.org. They're doing a lot of great work that they're just seeking to love people on their journey. So I'd check them out if you're looking for specific resources.
Cool. Awesome. And I'm sorry for people in the chat. There were a lot of good comments. I just didn't have time to go through and read them during the stream, but there was a lot of good stuff in the comments. And yeah, definitely we'll have Torn back on to go more into this stuff. But it is a pleasure and a privilege to know you and to be your friend and to be able to, you know, open up my humble platform. It's not the biggest in the world, but it's grown a little bit since you were last on, and I love that I can have people like you on and just try to just spread this ideas of love and self love and peace and freedom. Those ideas are at the core of both of our, you know, of libertarian anarchism and Christianity, and I love that we can connect all these things, and hopefully it's a blessing the people listening in. And so I thank you again for your time tonight to sit down and talk, and I want to thank everyone who took time to listen, and we will be back again next week with another episode. But until then, remember to go out there and don't fear the fire.
And let's LGBTQ plus, let's get Biden to quit, plus combo.
Yes. Yes, that is an LGBT Q I can get behind. All right, peace, y'all. Talk to you next week.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.